Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
I showed all of this and I said, we bought this property, we went away, we made $30,000 and we actually, it's costing us nothing to hold. Let's do it again.
This is Property Investory, where we talk to successful property investors to find out more about their stories, mindset and strategies. Tyrone Shum, and in this episode, we're speaking with property manager and the founder of Next Gen Property Management, Chris Dimitropoulos. We delve into his motivation for getting into real estate, his journey from Greece to Australia, and his relationship with his parents. We hear about his amazing aha moments and much, much more. We learn a little bit more about what a typical day might look like for someone as busy as Dimitropoulos.
I do quite a few things. I've been lucky, the real estate journey has allowed me to do a few things. So I spend a bit of time with a not-for-profit, some of my time. So they're looking after disabled people, and I guess a lot of my experiences through real estate and property, and it's helping them in their journey in the NDIS. So I spent quite a lot of time with them, and I've also spent quite a lot of time with my business, as I was saying before. And I'm the licensee in charge of the business, so I'm responsible for all aspects of it. I spend a lot of time on social media. I'm quite active on a Facebook group that we've got as an admin, which is all about property. So there's never enough hours in a day, I would say. I wish there's more time, and a lot of it revolves around property and real estate in one way, shape or form.
Dimitropoulos shares with us what the non-profit organization that he works for does to help people with special needs.
They're in the disability sector. They've got group homes, and that's the connection with property. Before I got into property management, I was in IT and I was a project manager. So when I was looking for a career change, I did two things. One is I started my own business, and the other thing is at the same time, I started helping this not-for-profit organization, which is looking after people living in group homes, basically. So a lot of the things. To do with property related to them. They've got tenants, which are people that stay there, and hence the connection.
We learn about the relation between his work with NDIS and whether that relates back to the properties that he works with.
It's completely separate, but the managing a tenant and managing a person with a disability, say they live in one of the group homes, is very similar. So properties need to be looked after, and a lot of the logistics are very similar. So that's an industry that's moving and it's evolving, and it's in its infancy. But I've got no doubt the worlds of the residential tenancies and the NDIS tenancies are sort of coming together in a lot of similarities.
Dimitropoulos talks to us about his background and what it was like for him growing up.
I was born here in Sydney. When I was 3 years old, my parents decided that they were Greek immigrants, basically, and they decided they had it made. They sold everything and they went to Greece. I lived there for the first 15 years of my life, and as soon as I turned 18, I couldn't wait to come back. So I've been back since I'm 18. I've been back now for about 25 to 30 years. A lot of my love for real estate has come from that, because my parents were some of the first off the circle to buy a property in Alexandria and here in Sydney. They bought it for something like £7,000 or something like that at the time. And after about 5 years, it had grown to 15,000 pounds, and that's in the 70s we're talking about now. And they sold it. They thought it was, they had it made and it was great. They went overseas, never bought a house. So I grew up basically as a tenant, and I've always wanted, this is something that always bothered me. All my friends had their own houses and I didn't. So I came back, and one of the first, and my parents came back straight after me. And one of the first things that I did was, as soon as I finished university and got a job 6 months later, I helped my parents buy a house, an apartment. And that was, you know, in three names. And I stayed there until it was sold, basically. So so this is safety, you know, it's always something that bothered me. So I wanted to get into real estate. So so we bought that, and my parents, you know, are still staying there, and they're forever grateful they've got a home. But that's one of the early influences in my life to go into real estate.
We get to find out what it was like for Dimitropoulos growing up in Greece and what studying there was like for him.
I was always a serial studier, so it was always drilled into me that I had to go to university. So as a just typical kid going to primary school and high school in Greece, and I was an okay student, I was, you know, top 10%, but, you know, same as most boys, I would say, you know, more interested in sport. So I was a basketball player. I loved my basketball, and I was preferring basketball over study most of the time, I guess. But going into university in Greece is very difficult because places are so limited. So I needed to come back. I was like an equivalent of a 90% ATAR in strength and tennis, but I couldn't get into university there, but I could here. So just as, you know, a month after I turned 18, I packed in my bags, my parents put me on a plane, and I arrived in Sydney. And I have to say, I arrived in Sydney with about $400 in my pocket because, you know, my dad was a taxi driver in Greece, never had a lot of money. So I arrived with it, but he gave me $400 and put me on the plane, and I came here, spent some time with and stayed with, you know, an uncle of mine until they arrived as well. So that's how my story starts in Australia. I was 18. I went straight to university, very little money, but a lot of dreams, I guess, as people have about going to university. And I always wanted to study IT. I was obsessed with IT at the time, so I thought that was the way of the future. And I think that proved to be a good decision, actually.
Coming to Australia with only a little bit of money, we find out about the types of jobs he had whilst he was studying at university.
I've always worked, even when I was living in Greece and always here. I've always had the summer job or the weekend job. I've worked anything you can imagine. I used to drive a truck delivering jukeboxes before the, you know, digital music came out. So that was a great idea that someone had then, about 20 years ago. Jukeboxes to parties, that was the main job when I was at uni. So I'd work three all weekend and just to drop off jukeboxes and pick them up in the end. So, I've always been a hard worker, driven to work and do, as you know, save and, you know, good with money, save and and just always try and do the right thing, I guess. I delivered bread for a little while at night so that we'd go to uni in the morning. So, but that didn't last too long because it's. So I kept falling asleep, I guess, in the lecture in the morning. So I worked in a secondhand shop at Redfern. They were selling furniture, so I'd work there as well. Odds and, you know, bits and pieces around it. I helped someone had an idea to put to buy coal in bulk and put it into small bags and sell it out. I tried to do that as well. So lots of little things that are, you know, anything, I guess, when you're at uni to just make a little bit of money on the side. And by that stage as well, my parents had arrived as well, so I didn't want to be a burden to them as well. I've got a brother and a sister, and they're younger than me. And, you know, my dad came back and started from nothing again, so I really didn't want to be a burden on my parents, I guess. So I was trying to help as much as I could.
With Dimitropoulos coming back and his parents not far behind him, He tells us about the reasons behind his parents deciding to leave to go back to Greece when he was young.
I think the driving force was my mum. My mum always wanted to go back to be with family. And so she persuaded my dad to pack up and go. They would have been here about 10 years before they left. But my mum always wanted to go back and be with her family. And we went and rented a house in Greece about 20 metres from where her brothers and sisters were there. So there's a strong family theme that I've been brought up with. And I think that's quite important in my upbringing and quite important with, you know, everything I do now. I think everything revolves around family, but that started from my mum. Mind you, I should say, it made absolutely no financial decision because it's not that they were multi-millionaires to go and retire there. They're still in the 30s. And they went back with no particular skills, and they went they were very risk averse as well. So whatever money they got out of selling whatever they had here, they put it in a bank and then slowly disappeared without actually doing anything meaningful. They had opportunity to start a business. They could have bought a property the first few years. They didn't, and then the money lost its value slowly as the years go by. And, you know, 15, 20 years later, when I got to about 18, they didn't really have that much in the end. So it's a few lessons there as well about, for me, about how risk averse you can be, and cash basically isn't really worth a lot as time goes by. So you got to put it somewhere.
Leaving Australia when he was so young to go to Greece, then coming back at 18, we learned what the driving force was to come back to Australia.
I didn't want to be a burden to my parents. So I was 18, there's not a lot of opportunities there. And that was before all the things happened in Greece as well, where, the economy tanked and there was no jobs whatsoever. But that was even before that. But I didn't want to be a burden to my parents. I always wanted to come back for as long as I can remember myself. So I wanted to go to university, which was going to be impossible to go to Greece, you know, to go to Greece and study IT. And it was a lot easier here. So just using my marks, I came back, I translated them, and I got accepted in the University of Wollongong to study an IT diploma at the time.
After he finished studying at university, we learned about his journey in the workforce and what type of company he worked in.
I went and got a job straight away, I guess. I was at IBM and I was the happiest person on earth. And I worked for about 6 months. And within those 6 months, my parents got it. We were still renting at the time. And my parents got a letter. We got a letter on the mail from a fund, I think it was called Montgomery Fund, which was for people that couldn't afford to buy a property. And the fund, which was had something to do with St. George, allowed you to buy a percentage of a property. So we had to buy 30% of a property, a three-bedroom apartment at Lakemba. That's where I was staying at the time. And the fund bought the 70%. And with the idea that we were like the owners, would take care of all the outgoings and all of that. We had to give the 10% deposit off the 30%, and there was no stamp duty and all of that. And whenever we could buy the rest, we would buy the rest basically. So with all those jobs, I had saved a bit of money, and I helped my dad put down the 10% of. It was about $30,000 then. The property was worth about $95,000. It was valuated at that. We bought the 30% and we started living, and that was our house, and it was the best thing ever, basically. We had our own house with my brother and my sister and my parents. And that was just as I was finishing university. And then I finished university, and about 6 months later I was working for IBM, and they were offering loans and for people, you know, discounted loans. They had a deal with MLC, I think, at the time, and we bought the other 70% of the property. And that was the first property in three names, and it's still in three names, myself, my dad's and my mum's, and I've got in my portfolio all those years later.
Mm-hmm. Coming up after the break, we delve into Chris Dimitropoulos' journey and how he got started in property.
I guess what happened is I got a job and I went to do my first tax return. And my accountant said to me at the time, you know, you can save some tax, you know, if you buy a property.
We learn about title insurance and how it can help you.
It's called title insurance. And it says that if at the time of purchasing a property that's on its own title, you're not aware of anything illegal, encroachments or anything else, then they'll cover you.
And that's next. I'm Tarun Sham and you're listening to Property Investory. Dimitropoulos goes into more detail about the fund that allowed them to buy their first property and explains in more detail about how it worked.
There was a fund that was called Montgomery Fund. It must have put a few million dollars aside, and anybody that wanted to buy their first property, wanted to buy a property and couldn't afford, I guess low income, which was my dad at the time, they would apply for a grant and they could buy whatever percentage they wanted. So we chose about 30%, I think. So we only had to borrow $30,000, and 10% of that was $3,000. We had to come up with a $5,000 deposit, I guess. And the assumption was it was our house, we'd pay everything else, as I was saying before, and you could buy the rest anytime you were ready. It must have been one of those weird things that governments were doing from time to time. I think it would have been like a state government initiative. I was actually surprised that nobody ever knows about that, but maybe worth looking it up. I think it's called Montgomery Fund. I remember going into St. George. It had something to do with the St. George Bank. You go into the St. George branch and bank at Cogra, and you'll do the paperwork and everything else through there. The good thing as well is that the fund made some money as well, because when I finished university 6 months later, I had another income, basically. So I finished university, I got a job, I had another income, and then we could apply for our own loan to buy the whole property. So we had to pay off the 70%. And the 70% had dropped, the property had gone from 95,000 to 120,000 by then. So we had to buy, the added value of the property as well. So they made some money too. So so that was good for everyone, I guess. But that was a good idea, I thought. And I'm surprised I've never heard anything like that not come.
We learned about what influenced him to actually take the next step to buy his first property.
What happened is I got a job and I went to do my first tax return. And my accountant said to me at the time, you can save some tax, you know, if you buy a property. And I said, that's a great idea. I've always wanted to get my own property for, you know, later in life. So I might as well buy a property and save a bit of tax at the end of the year. So believe it or not, my accountant, who I still have all these years later, he's the one that asked me got me to buy a property, but not for any other reason, but to save some tax. No idea what I was doing. Not for me, it was never about investing. It was more about, safety and save a bit of tax to begin with. So I bought the property, like you said, and then happy, the next year I went to him and told him I got the property. We did the numbers and I got a grand total of $2,000 tax return the second year of my job. And I thought that was amazing. And I thought it was amazing enough to, buy another one and save, and then I got a $4,000 tax return. And that's how I started my journey through my accountant. In fact, I would say my parents tried to actively discourage me from buying properties, I would say. As I was saying before, they were quite risk averse. When I bought the first one, great celebrations, but the second one, they started telling me that I shouldn't be doing this and, pay that off and whatever else. But I don't know, decided not to listen too much and just get on and do what I want. The interesting thing is as well, it's not, in all fairness to them, and I have to say I love them, the great support and everything else, and they always want the best for me. But it's not that they had made any sound financial decisions themselves to be given others financial decisions. That's the thing, about parents, they're always protective and thinking about, the kids from a different perspective.
Dimitropoulos has been buying properties since the mid-90s and has 13 properties currently in his portfolio. We hear about what has been his worst investing moment throughout all these years.
I can't say. A lot of it was before before knowledge was out there and people were doing it on their own. And I'm not talking about, you know, 50 years ago. I'm talking even 10 or 15 years ago. There wasn't that much information out there. So I've made quite a lot of mistakes. I've made some mistakes. For example, I bought an off-the-plan property in 2010. I wasted a couple of years on that. The lowest moment, I have to say, though, there is a happy outcome, but the lowest moment was a few Christmases ago, but would have been 3 or 4 years ago. I bought a property in Melbourne, which on its own title. A great little property. 3 days before Christmas, I go to open up my mail, a letter from a lawyer. And I have to say, that was right after we had done some renovations on my house here. And I was really low on my cash reserves, and I'm always big on having lots of buffers. But it was like a kind of like a vulnerable moment. I open my mail and there's a letter from some lawyers in Melbourne saying that the property that I bought a couple of years before was encroaching on the boundary with the property behind, and they were assessing their options, basically. That's what the letter said, but it was very formally written. And, you know, the letterhead was some very respectable lawyers from Melbourne. So I'm going to be honest and say I panicked. I was very low on cash. All I could think was that, you know, lawyers and court appearances and, you know, tens of thousands of dollars that I didn't have then. I started questioning, you know, why do I bother with all of that and stuff like that. Well, 2 hours in, when I started, like, you know, calming down a little bit, I remembered that when I bought the property, I had also bought title insurance. So you might think all these properties, you know, people might think that I'm crazy, but I'm quite risk averse in all of them. And there's always a method to my madness, I guess. But one of the things I really believe in is insurance. And, you know, and I had bought title insurance for all the properties that that are on their own title, not for apartments. But I've forgotten about it. It's one of these things that you get another form, you know, when you get the paperwork and you sign it, you pay whatever it is, and then off you go. I remember having done that. I went back and opened up all my files, and sure enough, it was there. I called them, and after Christmas, they came back to me formally to say that I'm most likely I'm covered by the title insurance, and it's all good. So then I slept again. You know, I have to say that Christmas, I did not sleep for 3 or 4 days.
I'd be the same thing as well. I'd be stressing and thinking, what do you do? Especially on Christmas as well, too. That's not a very good time to be receiving a notice like that.
The timing was perfect, I think. But it was a good ending, and it reinforced my views that just buy the insurances, it's tax deductible, forget it, buy it and forget it, and you never know. If you only need it once, then it's a good day. That's been my view, and that event reinforced it. But it was pretty low moment, I have to say.
You never know when things like title insurance might come in handy. And Dimitropoulos explains how you get it.
There's two or three organisations. I don't remember the name of it, but if you search it up, you'll find them. It's called Title Insurance, and it says that if at the time of purchasing a property that's on its own title, you're not aware of anything illegal, encroachments or anything else, then they'll cover you and every generation that comes after me, basically, that inherits the property from you. It, from memory, costs about $400 or $500. And that's it. It's basically for forever insurance. Then I looked into it, and I saw that they had claims up to $100,000 and $150,000. And, you know, they've got their own lawyers and all sorts of things. So myself going against the big firm in Melbourne is not the same as them going against them in the end. I should say as well, I never heard from those lawyers again. And I waited every day to see if they're going to come back to me. Not that I was worried, because I knew I'd have the backing of the insurer. But never heard from them again. And I think this is important, I think, if anybody listens to this, because in Melbourne there's a 15 year rule that says if an encroachment happened less than 15 years, you're covered. But anything before 15 years basically is null; it doesn't count. So when I looked into it, it might have been bordering 15 years or 15 or maybe 16 or 17 they had built the house that I bought. So it wouldn't have counted anyway. But so if anybody has a similar experience, I'd say don't panic. Look into it. Sometimes lawyers send you letters to scare you and see if you can panic and jump into a remediation and basically, you know, negotiate and give them some money and they move away. And it doesn't necessarily mean that they've got a grounds to proceed with a litigation, basically.
Throughout his many, many years of experience in his property journey, we learn about the moments when he came to the realization that he was on the right path.
There's two aha moments for me, if I could share. One was I bought a couple of properties to save tax, and I was getting those nice tax returns. Then we bought a house to live in, and I had a couple of little kids, and they needed a backyard. So for 5 or 6 years, nothing happened. Then about 2010, I had saved my $60,000 deposit, and I was ready to go again. And I convinced my wife, who was always skeptical about this, that it's okay to buy another one. So I bought this one-bedroom property at Cogra, right next to the hospitals there, and we bought it at about April or May. And then it settled and was rented already. We went away for our first trip in a while. We hadn't gone anywhere. We went to Hawaii for about 4 weeks. And in about September, I went back to the real estate agent that was managing it, and I said, how's it going and all that? And he said, you'd be pleased to know that, you know, you bought it for, I think it was $335,000. Then it's gone up to $370,000 now. The year was like 2010. So I said, that's fantastic. So I went away. We spent about $15,000 away, and then in that time, I actually made $30,000. So hold on, there might be something else to property than just saving tax here. So I came back home and I opened a spreadsheet, and I said, I'm curious to see how much that property is costing me. So I opened up a spreadsheet and I put in my rent and all the outgoings. I even calculated my depreciation and everything else, and it was rented for about $370 a week. So it was immediately positive and positively geared, and I didn't even know. So when I saw at the bottom that I was actually making $500 a year once I had my tax return, I thought, oh my God, what's going on here? So the first thing I did, I asked my wife, I called my wife, I said, Andrew, come here, let's have a look. Have a look at this. So I showed all of this, and I said, we bought this property, we went away, we made $30,000, and it's costing us nothing to hold. Let's do it again. And she looked at the numbers for about a minute, and then she said, okay, let's do it again. And that was the first moment that my wife actually came on the journey with me, and both of us saw it in a different light. So that was my first aha moment. And of course, what did I do? I went and bought another one about 2 months later. The second aha moment was when I had to go to Melbourne. And mind you, up to that point, I hadn't used any mortgage brokers. I hadn't used any buyer's agents or anything like that. When I went to Melbourne, I had no choice but to use a buyer's agent. Buying a property on my own, was quite hard. I have to go to opens and compete with others and put in bids and all sorts of things. So it wasn't easy. It was time consuming. But when I went to Melbourne, I had to use a buyer's agent, and I used one, and I realized that everything is done for you. You don't have to do anything. You pay a bit of money, but at the end of the day, I was ecstatic with the property. I didn't have to do anything. And I realized that maybe using others is the secret here. So, and that's what I did. So these are the two aha moments. One is there's more to investing than saving tax. And the other one was use others, because you get better property and you don't have to lift a finger, basically.
So, inspired by Chris Dimitropoulos' journey and his amazing aha moment, we'll keep the conversation going in a future episode of Property Invest Story. We'll discuss his motivation.
I've always wanted to have safety from 60 onwards, 65, when I retire, when I have a good life then, and then also help my kids as well.
The personal habits which have been contributing to his success.
If you work hard enough, I think it'll come to you. I don't think it has to do with some amazing gift or whatever. It's just stick to the fundamentals and work hard and it will happen for you.
And that's next time in a future episode of Property Invest Story.